Before social media influencers or the Food Network, there was a national icon who changed the way we cook at home. Julia Child, America's original celebrity chef. Learn how she inspired generations of foodies and home cooks in a limited-time, major national exhibition at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture. Julia Child, A Recipe for Life. On display March 16th through September 2nd at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture in Richmond. Learn more and get tickets at virginiahistory.org. virginiahistory.org.
It's Monday, April 15th, and we have Travis Milton, previously of Richmond, now at Nice Wonder Farms in Bristol, and James Beard nominee. Chauncey, also previous guest, opens a new restaurant. And Sunday, things are happening at Stanley's. Welcome to Eat It, Virginia.
Hello and welcome to Eat It Virginia, your number one podcast source for food news and interviews with the people who make Virginia restaurants great. Follow us on social media at Eat It Virginia and be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. My name is Scott Wise and I'm joined as always by my friend Roby Martin. A sincere note to our listeners.
We suck at sound and we're trying.
We are 100 episodes in. We've been a podcast for, 5 years, and I'm still trying to figure out the audio from time to time.
If we have a listener that wants to help us out, that knows what they're doing, please, please, please hit us up, because we are getting worse at it.
I think as we get older, yeah. We're getting worse. The technology, we just can't keep up. So right now, we should sound pretty good.
In the smallest room possible.
In the same room, on the same soundboard, doing the same thing. I tried something new today with our guest, Travis Milton.
He's a great interview and his sound was good.
Hopefully. We haven't really heard it yet. Hopefully his sound is good. Roby might have a little bit of an echo in her.
Sorry in advance.
Sound. Yeah. So I'm going to work with it in the edit suite, but I don't know. So anyway, if it sounds kind of weird, we apologize and we'll do better next time.
We will do better next time. So we got a couple cool things happening in Richmond. Loads of new openings. Loads. Chauncey, who was a previous guest of ours, is opening a new restaurant or involved in opening a new restaurant. Mary Lou's. Super stoked about
it. What have you heard about it?
Well, it's in the old Postbellum.
Okay.
Which is a pretty big
space. Is the old Mulligan's.
Which is the old... Yep, it could keep going if you wanted to, but I'm excited. I know that if he's involved, it's going to be really amazing, and I think that a soul food restaurant in that area of Richmond would be a really good idea. Kevin Sheffield, best new bartender, best, you know, all the things for many, many years, at Style, Richmond Magazine, is opening a restaurant in the old Lady New Orleans, Smoke and Barrel. So he used to bartend.
The old White Dog.
Good dog. This could be going forever.
Was it White Dog or White Spot? White Dog, right?
White Dog. White Dog.
Yeah.
White Dog.
White Dog. Say it again.
White Dog.
Okay.
He bartended at Lady New Orleans. So I feel like this is like a full circle situation.
How many years can you win Best New Bartender? Just curious.
Every year.
Oh, impressive.
In my opinion, if you're that good, why wouldn't you?
The Best New Bartender every year?
Yes.
Okay.
Stanley's has started a new Sunday and I think Monday night tradition called Dinner at Nina's.
I got a question for you about Stanley's that you might have an answer to or perhaps
hit
not.
Me.
So I walk by Stanley's on my daily lunch walk around town and I love Stanley's. Great meals there. And James is obviously a fantastic host. My question is their hours. What happens in that hour that they're closed between 2 and 3 or between 3 and 4? It's like they have a lunch and they have a dinner. I'm guessing they turn things over, but...
Naps.
That's what it takes?
No. Prep. It's a lot of work to make
all those cheese steaks. Well, I'm not working in the kitchen. I'm asking you. Yeah. So is that what it is?
I mean, they want it to be fresh and they want everything to come out of the kitchen beautifully. So they probably need a few minutes to get themselves back in a space where that can happen.
Awesome.
Tequila shots.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Between 2 and 3 at Stanley's every day.
Tequila shots. Yeah. They're going to have a little window that you can get them to as you're walking by.
So I did some reconnaissance for the podcast, Roby. I did.
Did you know?
I did. Well, you know, the people want to know all the food news.
Okay.
And I went on spring break in the beginning of the month to Memphis, Tennessee with my kids.
Is this the Dollywood trip?
No. Dollywood was last spring break.
Okay.
Memphis is... really far from Richmond. I don't know if you've ever been there
before. How far?
It's a 12-hour drive.
Okay.
Which I did. But on the way from Richmond to Memphis, not only can you stop at Travis's Travis Milton's
that you didn't do.
Restaurant and resort, which I should have done.
And stayed in a yurt.
Mm-hmm. I got in a fit. Roby, the thought of me staying in a yurt excited Roby to the point where she dropped her mic.
Yeah, I'm going to move on.
We promised good audio.
Yeah, here it is.
And you just, anyway.
But I got all these cords around me, Scott. Things are happening.
Don't share our secrets.
Okay. Anyway.
So, could have gone to Travis's resort and gotten a facial with my...
With your beard.
My bearded brother.
Right.
Instead, we stopped at Bucky's truck stop and gas station. Not once, but twice.
Because that's coming.
There's a new Bucky... There are several new Bucky's coming to Virginia. The first, I think... Well, the closest will be between here and Virginia Beach, which I think will be a...
Huge one.
Big time stop for you because you do that drive quite often.
Yeah, I don't stop at a lot of gas stations in between the two, but if you tell me that it's good, then I'll stop.
Have you been to Bucky's before?
No.
Do you know the story of Bucky's?
Is there chicken tenders?
I didn't see chicken tenders.
Oh, well then, okay. Tell me the story.
So it's basically like people would describe it as a gas station on steroids. I'm looking at you. You're looking at
a lot of pumps there.
Yes, there are a lot of pumps, but it's also
like people are making snacks that are worth eating, or is it like an MTO or a? Everybody get really excited about a Wawa and a Sheetz, and I don't really understand the excitement.
Right.
Do not come at me about this. I know that people have real feelings about Wawas and Sheetz.
I do like Wawas and Sheetz, but this is different. It's not. I would not say it's like Wawa and Sheetz. There's no deli. There's a big barbecue section in the middle. Chopped brisket, sliced brisket.
Are they doing it at that physical Bucky's?
Yes, they're
somebody's
there.
Somebody's behind
multiple people
barbecuing.
It's basically a barbecue restaurant in the middle of a Kroger, which is outside of a gas station with 100 pumps. It's kind of insane. But lots of snacks, lots of crunchies for your drive.
Barbecue?
I did. I bought so much. I'll put some pictures on the social. I bought so much food there. My kids were like, "What are you doing? We can't eat all this food." I'm like, I need to test it all.
Okay.
So breakfast tacos.
What like barbecue breakfast tacos?
This was bacon, egg, and cheese breakfast tacos, but they probably had barbecue too.
They're missing a real thing. Maybe they have barbecue because that's what really, they could be like, where did it originate? Texas?
Fantastic question. I don't know, but I can. It's mostly in the South, I believe.
Is it franchise owners? Can we have the franchise owner of the Bucky's that's opening here, or is it by all the same people? And also, can we talk to them?
I don't know. Probably.
Are we good?
Yeah. So
helpful. Anyway, look for pictures of the Bucky's stuff because Scott's tried it all, and we'll get his thoughts on that. He did not get a barbecue breakfast taco, which is a huge miss, I think, in his acquiring of Bucky's merchandise. But good. Anyway, how was spring break before we move along?
It was fantastic. Elvis? Ate a lot of barbecue. Elvis. Went to Graceland. Stayed at the guest house at Graceland. I paid full price, so this is not a plug.
What is the guest house at Graceland? Can more than one person stay?
Well, listen, if I'm going to talk about it, I expect a little something on the side. Guest house at Graceland.
Okay, Graceland, who does nothing to do with Virginia, certainly send Scott a voucher for some barbecue at Bucky's on the way.
The guest house at Graceland is a relatively new resort that is adjacent to Elvis's house, Graceland, in Memphis, Tennessee. So it's a huge hotel that they built on, I assume, property that Elvis once owned or that they bought in the interim. And
he didn't actually own it. Somebody lived there and they knocked down their house so you can stay.
It's Elvis themed, obviously.
It's Elvis adjacent.
They have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich bar distribution at 9 o'clock at night because that was Elvis's, you know, he ate the peanut butter and fried bananas.
The bananas and the bacon.
It's probably too expensive. So it's peanut butter and jelly.
All right.
And
do they have Elvis impersonators?
I didn't see any Elvis impersonators. They did have Elvis. They did have people playing music in the lobby, but they weren't necessarily impersonators.
But they were playing
house was
Elvis
fun.
Music.
I went to the house. Yes. Lots of Elvis music. And they played nightly Elvis movies in the theater.
Oh, cool.
I went to the house in the 90s when I drove cross country. When I was in college, I saw Graceland. And
has it changed?
It has, actually. They built like a whole entire Elvis land basically across the street. That's almost like you're walking into King's Dominion. You know, when you walk into King's Dominion or any of those theme parks, it's like a fake little facade of a town or whatever.
Sure.
They sort of have done that. I think it's called Elvis's Memphis or Elvis's Graceland. I forget what it's called, but they have like a bunch of different exhibits and whatnot. And then they shuttle
Is there an Elvis Ferris wheel?
Did not see a Ferris wheel.
Rats.
They shuttle you across the street to the actual mansion. My daughter, who was the impetus for this trip, is a huge Elvis fan, was just bawling on the whole shuttle ride over because she was so excited, which is why we went. And it was lovely. It was awesome.
Good. Well, at Graceland, or Elvis, if you're hearing us, he'd like a
think Elvis voucher. Is listening.
Yeah. Hey, you never know, Scott. You just never, never
I want a
know.
Plane ticket because that's a long drive.
It is a long drive. So, Scott, I have something to talk to you about.
Is it serious? Should I stop recording?
No. I really need to talk to you about this. So I don't know if you know, I tend to get a little up in arms about things, and I'm a little upset with River Road restaurants right now.
You know, funny you should say that, because I was just casually scrolling through my socials the other day, and lo and behold, your profile came up on my Instagram stories, and I see you touched a nerve, which is so unusual.
I know. Oh, that's funny. I have thoughts about some of the, and I need to be specific about which restaurants on River Road, because obviously River Road is long and there are a lot of restaurants, but I'm mainly talking about the ones before you go over the bridge when you're coming from the city. So when Cary turns into River. And I think that we do not hold them as consumers to a high enough standard.
Why do you think that is?
Well, why do we as consumers not hold them to a high enough standard, or why do they not hold themselves to the standard?
You said we as consumers don't hold themselves to a high enough standard, so I think that was the first question you answer.
Okay, so I think that the individuals that live around the restaurants that they go to the most stop having the same thoughts about the restaurants that are near them than the ones that they go to, like, special occasion wise.
Because it's convenience. They go in there for convenience and familiarity.
So yeah, I'll propose this question to you. So I bet you in the square, let's just call it the square of where you go out to eat near where you live, you probably have 3 or 4 restaurants that you frequent a lot.
Yes.
When you go to that restaurant, are you like, oh, this isn't amazing, but it's close?
Yes.
But when you go out of that square, you think to yourself, I have taken the time to go a mile further, so I need to think more about this food.
The restaurants that are in my square are not restaurants necessarily that I'm expecting to have my socks knocked off.
But why not?
Because they're just not those kind of restaurants.
But why are they not? Like, what restaurants aren't that kind of restaurant? Like, that's my question. Why are we okay with some restaurants putting out subpar food, and sometimes they're extremely busy, and other restaurants putting out the same type of food, but we're not okay with that?
Well, I think it's an individual thing. I mean, some people might be super upset just because I'm not and you are doesn't mean... I wouldn't generalize necessarily the entire dining population, or do you think that is the case?
Well, I don't want to make a generalization about the entire dining population. That would be absurd of me. But I can tell you, based on the response I received, at least for what it's worth, these restaurants are in my square, right? So, like, this are very close to me. And I cannot figure out why. And you would consider, I think a lot of people would consider these restaurants to be places where they don't go all the time, right? They're considered more expensive.
Special occasion.
Yeah, this is not fast
night
food.
Out with
this
the friends.
This is not a Cava. This is not a Chipotle.
Right.
Which are both really great restaurants.
They serve their purpose.
Right. I think that if restaurants are closer to us, we're more likely to give them a pass.
You're more likely to be a repeat customer, which means you're more likely to have multiple experiences there, both good and bad. Whereas if I'm driving to somewhere out of my comfort zone or my zone of ease, I'm making up a phrase, I might have a little higher expectation. And if I have a bad experience, I'm not going to go back because it's 20 minutes away or it's twice as expensive as what I'm usually used to paying.
So proximity or ease means we're easier on the restaurant?
I think so.
Okay, so I have a question to people that are listening, because I would really like to know, like, how does that work? Why do restaurants that we have to go further for, based on where we live, do we treat a little bit more harsher than the ones, that's so eloquent, do we treat harsher than the restaurants that are closer to us? I mean, I really think it's a valid concern. And then I think that those restaurants, because of the, I mean, like, let's talk about concentration of people. Where I live, there's a lot of humans going to these same restaurants. We're all having subpar experiences. Do we feel so comfortable in the restaurants that we don't bring it up to the restaurant?
Is there a difference in your mind? And again, I'm talking to a food journalist and currently a restaurant critic. So, I mean, your perspective, I think, is different than my perspective.
But I think everybody eats. So everybody eats. The perspective is what it is.
But what are you saying these restaurants are bad or they're just not giving you top-notch service?
So by and large, I think some of them are bad. Obviously, this is my opinion. You may think that that's not the case. But I think that if you're receiving really awful health code violations, if you're unable to keep your beer lines clean, so you're serving beer that's not, that doesn't taste good, if you've dumbed down your menu to the point where maybe your fish isn't fresh or your pasta is not in good shape or you're not using the ovens that you have the way you should, if your wine list is limp, like, I feel like you are doing us as a consumer, it's bad. All of these things are resting on a laurel because a large amount of people live close to the restaurant.
And have perhaps memories of a better time.
Yeah, nostalgia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about our night out, by the way? We had a night out recently.
Oh, yeah. So we did have a night out. Yes, it's seared into my memory.
Jesus. Roby and I met at the station. We did a little recording session, which we'll never see the light of day.
You may not see this.
That's true. And decided to go for a walk to dinner.
We did. You know what? You made a really good point. You're so sweet, Scott. We should really do this more often. We ended up seeing a lot of individuals, actually more than I thought we were going to, that have been on our podcast. We made some friends at both. We stopped a couple of places and we actually made friends at both places and had lots of chats. And then really, I mean, had some exceedingly good snacks.
Very nice. Let's tell the folks where we went. Just, I mean, might as well drop the bomb.
So we went to Boku, and if you haven't had the panisse at Boku, I think that you're really missing out. Our oysters were excellent. Our service was fantastic. And then we went to One More Taco, and she has a new chicken dish.
Shredded chicken tacos.
That's superb. It's absolutely stellar. And then Scott had a porn star martini.
It was a night to remember for many reasons.
Or maybe we forgot because we had two porn star martinis, but it is what it is.
That's right. So thank you to everyone we met that night. We saw Chris Staples out.
Thank
you. That was fun.
Oh my gosh, we did see Staples. Yeah, it was good to see it. We saw a lot of people. Emily from NWine, Chris Staples from obviously previously at Eat and now at Toast. We saw Maria from One More Taco. We saw one of the owners of Boku. I mean, it was just a random Wednesday.
Something like that. Middle of the week for sure.
He has a warning.
Just a warning for the folks at home. Just a reminder that the audio might be a little funky when Roby speaks in the podcast interview with Travis. We apologize. It's pretty much Roby's fault. And
Scott is making me do like circus stuff to get his audio together. And I don't really understand.
All she has to do is buy a mic, people. And she just refuses.
I have two mics. You have given me two mics and neither one of them.
Here's Travis Milton. Enjoy.
And a really big end. Oh, walking.
On this.
I can't tell you how many dishes I have been. Well, I think we're, you know, let's tweak this real quick, and it's 5 minutes before service. So yeah, you trying something new 5 minutes before recording is definitely true chef style.
For the folks listening at home, Travis Milton just called me a true chef. I feel honored. I think the podcast is over.
Sweet.
We've hit the climax.
That was pretty quick.
There's a lot of jokes to be made there, but I'm gonna not make that joke and pass it on to Roby to get the official start of the podcast going.
I'm excited. We've had a couple of James Beard-nominated chefs on the podcast. We've had some that were nominated in the same round as Travis. Travis is really a Richmonder who's moved essentially to the edge of Virginia and has opened a restaurant called Hickory at Nice Wonder Farm. We're going to talk about where you started, which is just here where we're located.
How long is this podcast? So I started out, my first executive chef job was at a joint, if anyone remembers, Bottega Bistro on Southside at the Shops of Belgrade for Clay Thompson, who owns the Rouge Crit Steakhouse franchise as well. And moved on from there to start my own restaurant with Brian Munford from Patina Grill. I'm really, really showing, not that the gray hairs don't already, but showing my age with these restaurant references, because they're all long gone. But my first restaurant job was at Crab Louie's Seafood Tavern in Midlothian, Virginia. I was 15, washed dishes, and kind of came up through the ranks with a buddy of mine, Adam, Chef Adam Chum, who he went on to become the chef at Bottega after he went to culinary school. And while I was student teaching at Hermitage High School, he had approached me to come on board there as a line cook. So I came on board, and within like a month I had been promoted to sous chef. And then he left to open up I believe the restaurant's called Zupa in the Bottom.
Remember all these places, Travis. You're hitting a very soft spot in my heart. This is like like early 2000s, early mid 2000s. Like, what year are these?
Early 2000s. I worked at Bottega for a while. Then I was at Rich Brow briefly with, I was bartending with T. Leggett, of all people. It was hilarious.
Everybody knows who that is. He's Emerald Lounge and the Jasper, one of the owners of both in Richmond, Virginia.
An amazing bartender who was just slinging ales with me upstairs in the dance club bar. And I would line cook during the day. And I went and I staged a bunch of places. I went to New York and worked at WD for a little while, worked at Encanto in San Francisco. And this was all while I was putting together my restaurant Parkside with Brian Munford from Tina. And from there, worked for Amy Cabanis at, helped her open up Mint, and my good buddy Randall Detzer, who is killing it up there right now. I got to go to Adara for a short little dinner last time I was in town, and I love everything that man does. And from there, Jason Alley and I started talking, and I ended up at Comfort, and that's really kind of where I started making a name for myself and where I was able to really start implementing kind of what was in my head and my heart, being Appalachian food and the food I grew up with a little bit of a spin. It was a little more, for lack of a better term, and for pun's sake, it was a little more comforty at that point, less tweezery than I am now. But it was a great step. Like, I look at my time at Comfort as some of my favorite times in Richmond. You guys know very well, I was probably a pain in the ass to everyone in the world, but I was having a lot of fun and just being kind of a, I don't even know what the cussing rule is. So I threw out and asked.
Don't bleep it.
Okay. So good. I'm glad you guys had a bleep ready for me.
You mentioned Appalachia, and obviously that's where, you know, you made a name for yourself. What is Appalachia and what is Appalachian food to you?
So Appalachia is a lot more than people think. A lot of people, when they think of Appalachia, you know, their mind immediately goes to poverty porn or opioids and super conservative voters and, you know, all kinds of bad places, which I'm not going to romanticize and say that, you know, that's not a part of Appalachia. But Appalachia to me is this beautiful creativity through that subsistence. And, you know, looking back on the things that my grandmother would cook, you know, a lot of these things were made because, you know, she had what she had and she had to make something with it. So, you know, when I started delving deep into it, I started getting into things like the mock apple pies and things like that, that were, you know, people were making an apple pie out of Ritz crackers and apple cider and butter, you know, as the inside of the pie, as the stuffing, because they didn't have apples. That to me is the beauty of it. You look at a lot of cuisines, especially in the South, you know, there's this beautiful and complicated history, and Appalachia is no different, but there's almost like a more pressing point of authenticity. It's almost like there's a Polaroid that people kind of, the static point where people say, like, this is what you know, Low Country cuisine is. But Appalachia is, it's so evolving. You go to, you know, any different place in Central Appalachia, and someone has a different definition of what chow chow is, or what a, you know, a different way of making an apple stack cake, or a different way of drying beans. And, you know, it's all kind of the same thing, but it all was all born out of just necessity. And that to me is the beauty. That combined with the fact that, you know, when it comes to cuisines of the South, you know, we're the only one that experiences seasonality. So you throw in preservation, you throw in the diversity of immigrant cultures, indigenous cultures, and enslaved cultures, and you get what I've always called the first melting pot. You've got, you know, all of and spread out. You know, you've got Italian coal miners in West Virginia, and that's where pepperoni rolls come from. You know, people don't think about, you know, Italian food when they think about Appalachia or the South per se, but that's what's beautiful to me. It's this creativity and diversity that is kind of untapped, unfortunately, in food culture outside of here.
It sort of reminds me, when you describe it, it sort of reminds me of a town like New Orleans a little bit, where all these cultures and peoples kind of came together for a variety of reasons, and this cuisine and this kind of whole new culture rose up from it. Is that, am I off base there?
And the cooler thing is that, you know, New Orleans is just, you know, one city, and obviously Louisiana, when you get into the Acadians and other different immigrant cultures, you know, stuff gets very different as well. But just the fact that, you know, Appalachia is actually, you know, starts at the base of New York and goes all the way to northern Georgia. So, I mean, it's this huge sprawling region that's really kind of boxed into one thought process, and you know, there's so much more to it than what meets the eye. I'm looking at a Transformers figure, that's why I thought about that.
Optimus Prime or someone else?
It's Megatron. So I have a lot of action figures.
A Decepticon, then. I got you.
Yes.
So at what moment, I mean, it seems to me that, did you go into the, it doesn't sound to me like you went into the restaurant world saying that I'm going to be an Appalachian chef, but so at what point did you say, this is the route I want to take?
You know, there's very like crystallizing moments that I talk about. And, you know, one was in New York while I was working with, you know, molecular gastronomy and kind of, didn't really feel like the heart and the soul behind it. And I think that was kind of moment number one. Like I loved what I was doing. I still, you know, utilize a lot of those techniques and things in what I do, but it just didn't have that, you know, that heart, soul, story, love that I really kind of associated with cooking. And it wasn't until, probably when I was at Mint or going to Comfort that I really kind of realized that that's kind of the love language I learned from my grandmother and my great grandmother, and even my great great grandmother, and my mother. There's a lot of mothers. And that's what I was really kind of craving, like in what I was doing. And you know, I really started incorporating those things. And when I say crave, I mean, like I needed it for my soul, but also like I missed being able to eat greasy beans, the things that I grew up with here that people in Richmond and in other areas, you know, had no idea of. And that combined with, I started doing a lot of work with my sister from another mister, Laura Smith, in Kentucky on a lot of social issues, things like that, people lenses of food, kind of like what the Southern Foodways Alliance does, but focus on Appalachia. And working with Roddy Lundy, I really kind of went full bore in a lot of ways on nonprofit work and focusing on the fact that I thought that post-coal, that hospitality could be something that Appalachia needs, that could be an economic driver here, that could be a way to grasp that voice that I was talking about that we didn't have. And that was when I realized, I was like, I'm going to do Appalachian food, and I need to do it in Appalachia. As much as I love and adore and miss Richmond, I wanted to make sure that the region and the area was seeing the actual benefit, and I wasn't being extractive. So that was while I was at Comfort, and Nicole Lang. She was doing some food writing, and she was doing baking. Her and Marty had referred Ronnie to me in regards to a book she was writing on sorghum syrup, and I have been an ardent sorghum user and supporter my whole life, and I was one of the few restaurants in Richmond that was using it at that point, because this was real early on before it got, you know, super popular. And Nicole passed my info along to Ronnie Lundy, and Ronnie emailed me one day while I was sitting in the office, and my mind was immediately blown, because her book, Chuck Bean Stat Cake and Honest Fried Chicken, I think was the first time I ever, reading that book was the first time I ever felt really tethered to where I grew up in Appalachia and felt comfortable with it. I had kind of run away from Appalachia. When I got old enough, I tried to distance myself from it, but food was really what brought me back to loving where I grew up. And that book was integral to it. So that was one of the like coolest moments ever, was sitting there and I was eating wrap snacks. I even remember Dirk McGirt, chive and onion wrap snacks in the office.
Ronnie has been a big part of this, because you got ready to open a different restaurant in Appalachia, right? During which she came out with the book Biddles.
Yeah. I was planning on opening up the same concept, but different name. I had really wanted to call the restaurant Shovel and Pick, which I'm glad I didn't now, because everybody in the freaking world has a blank and blank. Like, you can just have a hipster restaurant creator online. So I'm glad I didn't do that. Being in that book really, like, that was what kind of really put my name out there. And to be honest, I've been very honest with her. I mean, she's like my second mom. You know, it was very daunting. I mean, I went through very much kind of a mental breakdown, because, you know, I had articles coming out, patron saint of Appalachia, you know, like all of this kind of stuff. And I really, really started feeling this pressure on my shoulders, like in the region. And it was a lot. I'm really thankful I went through that. But, you know, there was a beauty, a blessing, and a bane to it all. And, but I'm still like honored to death to have been in that book, and I wouldn't be where I am today if not for being included in that.
You moved from that particular restaurant where you are now, or is there a stop in the middle?
I opened up a restaurant called Milton's in St. Paul, Virginia, about 2 miles from the town I grew up in, Castlewood, with some partners that were opening a boutique hotel there. And that was, you know, during that point, that was kind of when I really had my breakdown, and had that massive weight kind of hit me was during that stint. And, you know, I ended up just having to step away, and thankfully I had people, and this is like the weirdest name drop in the world, but like I was not in a good headspace. I was kind of bottoming out, and I called Andrew Zimmer, and it happened to be his freaking birthday, and dude answered the phone and like found therapists and stuff for me to talk to. Like weeks later, I found out it was his birthday, and I was like, that's what an amazing guy will stop his birthday party to talk to a lowly chef out in St. Paul, Virginia, that is experiencing mental health issues. And so, you know, I detached myself from that, and that's how Hickory and Nice Wonder Farm and Vineyards kind of came about. My current partner, Kevin Nice Wonder, his family all grew up in Wise, Virginia, with around the corner from my mom's family. And he knew about me, and I had planned on just kind of taking, you know, 6-8 months off and not do anything. And he approached me and he said, you know, I know you're in a delicate point, and I would love to bring you on board, you know, take your time with coming on board and doing stuff. And you know, it took us a while to get the thing built. I joke all the time that, like, Hickory is like I was really scared that it was going to be the punchline to a long ass joke that wasn't that good, because I've been talking about opening up this concept for going on like 10 years and it finally happened. But Kevin was amazing. Let me take my time in getting through all of that and getting healthy. And you know, it's been an amazing experience. Like, he has been one of the best partners I've ever had in a restaurant and in a concept and in vision. He's just absolutely phenomenal. And I thank the stars above for the restaurant that I've got now.
I want to talk about your success in Hickory and the nomination and everything in more in depth in a moment, but I just want to touch back on the thing we were just talking about. I think a lot of us can relate to mental health issues. I mean, it's not an unusual thing. It's a very common thing. Mm-hmm. And so my questions for you are, how did you realize you were going through something? Like, what was how did it manifest? And then how did you pull yourself out? You kind of mentioned therapy, but if you don't mind getting into a little more specifics about how you recovered.
You know, I really started with talk therapy, and you know, it really kind of went from there when I was able to start talking some of these things out and realizing that, you know, the PR firm that I was working with, I'm not putting onus on them in any way, shape, or form, but you know, there was this sense that I needed to always wear a snap button Wrangler shirt. I always, you know, I needed to have, you guys remember my beard? It was down to my freaking chest. I looked like I rolled off a mountain, which is a part of me, but not like all of me. I'm typically a hip hop hoodie wearing, Jordan wearing skate kid. And you know, so it kind of got to a point where, like, I was really kind of lost in my identity, was kind of lost in a brand that they were trying to formulate, and that was really really funky to deal with. And then with going to see some specialists and some doctors, I came to find out that I am autistic, which I know is a buzzword right now, and I feel like, you know, it's kind of almost taboo to say it at this point, because so many people are you know, oh, I'm on the spectrum or this or that. And but I did come to find out that, like, my OCD levels are insane. My sensory levels are almost like a superpower, which is good in cooking, because you know, the way my brain focuses, the way my taste sensations, my tactile sensations, everything are very heartened. And that's part of why I used to have a Schlitz and a glass of whiskey in my hand all the time. And once I started learning, like, what my brain was doing and what I could do to be better in my mental health, I really started getting back to loving cooking and loving being in the kitchen and loving teaching and loving, you know, Appalachia. And so, I mean, it was an absolute godsend. And yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty amazing journey, you know, coming through that. And I, to be honest, I love talking about it. I'm glad that you asked about it. And I've talked freely about it. I was, you know, Roby has seen me as a drunken tornado. But you know, nowadays, like, I don't even have a bottle of whiskey in my house. I wouldn't call myself sober. I definitely still enjoy wine, but I'm nowhere near the chicken suit wearing a dude in a field downing moonshine. I'm much healthier, much happier, and it's pretty amazing. And I'm very thankful for the journey. You know, it didn't feel very good at the time, but if that hadn't have happened, I don't think I'd be another reason why I don't think I'd be where I am.
I appreciate you being so open. Maybe people think that the individuals in your industry don't have issues because it's so common. I mean, again, everybody eats.
Well, yeah, that. And, you know, we're in the business of being hospitable. It's hospitality. You know, when you see me, like in the dining room, I could be, you know, going through something horrendous, but I'm going to be smiling and joking because that's what I do. That's what I'm
expecting.
What I love. And it's almost an escape, you know, for a lot of us. Like, being able to put that mask on, and you know, that kind of is something that does, you know, compound those sometimes, is that you don't actually get to take that mask off as often as you would like, and you don't get to be 100% yourself and authentic because you are trying to you know, fill these roles that people see you as a chef, whether it be, you know, it seems like now, like, you've got to be an activist, you've got to be a chef, you've got to be a writer, you've got to be, you know, a person in the front of the house of the restaurant, on top of the fact that we're plumbers, electricians, accountants. Like, we do 20 million things during a day that are, you know, would comprise, you know, 30 different jobs. But you know, and that really kind of was how my autistic diagnosis came about. And, you know, I was very confused when they told me, because I was like, I've never felt, you know, these things that strongly when I was younger. I didn't think this was something that could, you know, come on. And they told me, they're like, well, just think about it, you know, you've got a glass that holds so much water, and you're pouring 3 gallons of water into a, you know, a 2-quart cup. And so all of these things are flowing over because you've got more to deal with than you did when you were 13. So yeah, you might not have had the same reaction to these things in your brain and how your brain works. And but now that you're doing all of this, and stress will compound that, and so luckily it did. I feel like it's kind of like a coal and a diamond thing. You know, the pressure kind of, you know, forced me to become something that I'm much happier with.
So I have a selfish question and then a non-selfish one. I want to know when we can have lamb stock at Nice Wonder.
I would love to do that. I'm trying to work together something this fall that's kind of along the same vein, but with pigs. Get some pitmaster friends up and do a big kind of blowout in August. And I'll keep you guys posted on that. And our accommodations are much nicer than we have golf carts. We have Don Deere gators, but we have yurts that are not made of multiple tents put together. We have these amazing luxury yurts that, you know, have bathrooms as opposed to overflowing portolettes.
For the people who are listening, in case they're not aware of this, there was a group of us, a very large group of chefs, James Beard winners, etc. You're not one of those. And we'll talk about that in a second. Farmers, distillers, brewers, we all got together in our own tents in a lamb field and cooked with each other for like 3 days, 5 days. A lot
of
time.
It almost kind of seemed like one day just with like enhanced, enhanced timing, I guess. I don't know.
I always ask myself, did this really happen? Or did I dream this up and there are photos?
Yeah, it happened multiple times. And I'm just thankful I won't have to shuttle people to the local area Walmart to take a dump. you need to do a whole lamb stock show of just get some of us in there to tell stories of naked people making pizzas and
best pizza I've ever had. Let's talk James Beard.
I mean, it was super, super cool. And I think it happened at the perfect time in my career. And this is going to sound like one of those stupid humble brags, but like, I think I would have taken it too seriously if it had happened to me earlier in my career. I think I would have, it would have gone to my head a little bit. But, you know, with this, I didn't expect it. in any way, shape, or form. I was actually reading through the list, and I read my own name aloud and went like five other nominees down, and then stopped myself and was like, "Wait, what did I just read my name?" But it was amazing and such a cool thing to happen. It's really still just kind of sinking in, but the fact that it happened like while I'm in Bristol, I mean, again, like you know how much I love and adore Richmond, but it happening in Richmond would have been one thing. I'm in a larger market. I feel like there's more, there's definitely more coverage of what's going on there. But the fact that it happened in Bristol, you know, Virginia, like it just blows my mind. And I'm so happy because it's so much to like what I'm doing here, whether it be the farm or whatnot. But, you know, there's not the talent pool that, you know, I had in Richmond, that we all had in Richmond, which, you know, I know that nowadays we're all going through staffing issues, but, you know, there's no other fine dining or kind of elevated food, you know, for a hot minute. And I'm working with people that are coming from places like Quaker Steak and Lube or, you know, Powell's, a local, franchise fast food place, Applebee's, that have no understanding of like advanced technique. You know, these places are doing, you know, microwave cooking, you know, things like that. And, so it's been a lot of teaching and building. You know, the menu I put out in the first year, I loved, but it wasn't what I wanted to put out because I had to build skill levels. And, you know, going into year three of being open, you know, I think we were really hitting our sweet spot. My chef cuisine, he's a local kid. My sous chefs are, yeah, everyone in my kitchen's local. At this point, like I brought, you know, some people in, you know, at opening from outside that I knew, like, Dylan, from Charlottesville. Yep. And, my buddy, Mitchell, who was from Ashley, he was with, William Disson at the Marketplace. Yeah. I brought in some great people and they, you know, they're both doing amazing things. Mitchell's, executive sous chef at Pineapple and Pearl, or no, Rose's Luxury, and Dylan's doing his thing with his seafood and at a Public House, I believe it's called, in Charlottesville. But I'm so proud to like be at a point where like I got this nomination because of these amazing people that I work with that have invested in this vision and this idea and invested in growing, and they see the opportunity and they share that love of the food and of the farm and where it comes from. And it's just been a beautiful, amazing thing. And I feel like, it's the Zoloft talking every now and again, because I'm like, it's so shiny and bright, and I'm going to walk in today and find 15 things that I've got to fix. But at the same time, like Andrew Stafford, my chef of cuisine, he is just such an amazing, amazing kid. He's 24 years old and he's essentially running this kitchen. This, you know, we've got, you know, we're doing buyouts and 300 person weddings and, you know, and this kid, you know, came out of local culinary school down here and he's killing it. He's so creative, so wonderful. And I value him so much as a friend. I'm so proud of him. And none of this would happen without all of those wonderful people. And that's my biggest thing. Like I feel like the James Beard was less of a validation for me and more of a validation for the work and the dedication that these people have put into the restaurant and the vision and learning. And that's, you know, that's something that I don't think I can ever measure the amount of pride that I have in
them. I love that. And I'm excited for you guys. I'm hoping I could get down there to see you all before then. I hear really cool things are happening.
You better. I'll put you in one of those beautiful luxury yurts and drive you to Walmart to go to the bathroom.
Yurt and luxury, for some reason, does not sound synonymous.
I mean, they're beautiful. They're wooden. They're not a tent. They've got these amazing skylights. They're all underneath these just beautiful hickory trees. My chickens are right next door. It's literally 10, 20 steps from our tasting room for a vineyard. And that's one thing I don't talk enough about. Like, we're actually putting out good wine, like, in Appalachia, which is something most people think is a complete oxymoron. But our Viognier, you know, we won a gold medal in the Governor's Cup for Viognier, I think 3 years in a row. And I think we got a silver this past year. Our Petit Verdot is amazing. It's just super cool, like, having a place where, you know, very easily could have just thrown out some muscadines and made, you know, sweet wine, muscadine wine, and, you know, pushed local tourism. But the Nice Wonder family were very intentional about, like, what they were doing, and they wanted to put out good stuff. And, you know, we worked with Michael Chaps for the first, I want to say, 6 years of getting it together, with him helping us bottle, helping us with planning schedules, helping us in so many ways. And because of that, like, we've got a really solid wine in a place where you wouldn't expect it in the least.
I love that. So if people are looking for you, it's at Nice Wonder in Bristol. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So we, as esoteric as my wine brain is, I do have a pretty extensive list outside of our wines, but we obviously focus a lot on ours. But we just don't make any orange wine or crazy, you know, stuff that I like to drink, funky stuff.
I love the natural wine.
Yeah, I'm a huge natural wine geek. And, but yeah, we've got a various, I think we've got 3 different garden plots right now. We grow a good chunk of our stuff on site. So, you know, when you're there in the summertime, you can go out and see the greasy beans that are going to be on your plate later. We do work heavily with local farmers outside of there as well. That's one of my things. Like, if I'm going to support the community, I've got to, I can't keep it all in house. So I want to be able to support the farmers outside of the property. So we do a lot with them as well. But we've got cattle. We're getting ready to have some free roaming foraging hogs. I'm working with a hog grower out of Edisto, South Carolina, to get those up here. We've got chickens, so we do all of our own eggs. We have a sister property that is a golf community that, you know, if you stay at the inn, you're able to play golf. And it's a Tom Fazio, of course. I don't play golf, so I don't know what the hell that means. But apparently Tom Fazio,
it's good.
Yeah, you know, that's good stuff. We've got... God, I mean, we're doing a lot of, like, wellness stuff. We've got a spa that just opened. We're doing, like, gemstone therapies, which everybody is just crapping their pants over how amazing it is. I, again, like, I haven't delved into that portion of the wellness yet. But I did get a facial there because they had to practice facials on a dude with a beard.
You're the perfect candidate.
Yeah, 100%. And it's the first time I've ever had that done. And
next time you can call me, Travis. Come on.
Yeah, I got you covered, Scott.
Shoot me a DM.
I will, totally will. but they're doing amazing work. They're
can I get a video of that?
Yes. Beard
and facial soap. I feel like that's social media gold.
Oh, that's 100%. But a spa is super amazing. We've got 9 luxury yurts. I think 2 of which are actually double yurts. They've got 2 queen rooms. All
the queen rooms are queen rooms.
Queen, damn straight, they're queen. But they all have kitchenettes. They all have, you know, full living rooms. They're all a wonderful deck. They're absolutely amazing. If you want to take a look at them, go to the website. The inn itself is just majestic. When you come over the hill and you see the vineyards to your right, and you look and you're just like, holy crap, that's it. It really creeps up on you, and it's beautiful. But
in terms of the restaurant, can you just drop in, or do you have to be a guest at the property?
No, you can drop in. We're open to anyone and everyone. The local community has been amazing. you know, it's really, really cool because this, the end is really what makes this possible. You know, it's really hard to start a fine dining restaurant in a rural area, but having that, like, I don't want to say captive audience because that sounds weird. It sounds like I'm kidnapping people, but having people like in house, you know, that are going to come down and eat breakfast, eat lunch, you know, and have dinner there, you know, 2-3 nights while they're staying, you know, that really affords the ability to be able to do this. Otherwise, you know, you'd be wondering, is anybody going to come down here? Especially because, you know, we're not in downtown Bristol. We're, you know, probably about 10-12 miles away, and we're, you know, you got to go down this long winding road and you think you're lost, and then you see the place. But, you know, because we're not there with other restaurants and anchor stores, it's not like somebody's just popping out for maybe I'll get a table. So, you know, we're definitely reservation heavy, but yeah, anybody can come in and, you know, really, you know, having the hotel there makes it all possible.
Well, I'm hoping you're about 4.5 hours from Richmond if people want to drive, which is not a bad thing. I'm so stoked you joined us. Obviously, I'm super familiar with work, but I'm excited for everybody else to see what you're doing.
You were either the first or second person to ever review me.
He saved it to the end, Roby. He wanted you to shoot at all the easy questions first.
No. Like I will say three people early on that really, if it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't have a name in the business. And it's you, Dale Reitzer, who came into my restaurant and told me my food was shit.
I love that guy.
I do too, but he did it in a loving way. He was like, you can do better. Susan Winnecke, I miss everybody in Richmond. I miss the Firefighter Fork Festival. I miss Broad at Feed. I miss Comfort. I miss that crappy old galley kitchen.
Oh, you guys thought it was crappy. We diners thought it was great.
I know. No, I was just but I call it the pirate ship. Like, we were just a bunch of pirates back there. We all, you know, drank whiskey constantly. We all had beers. We all spoke like gravelly voiced Irish people. But yeah, and I miss you guys.
Well, we're excited to have you. I'll see you over Zoom at least. I'm going to hopefully make it down to actually see you in person. You're listening to Eat of Virginia with Roby Martin, Scott Wise, and our guest, James Beard nominee, Travis Milton.
Looking forward to that facial, buddy.
This episode of Eat It Virginia. This episode of Eat It Virginia. No! Oh, God, no.
Before social media influencers or the Food Network, there was a national icon who changed the way we cook at home. Julia Child, America's original celebrity chef. Learn how she inspired generations of foodies and home cooks in a limited-time major national exhibition at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture. Julia Child, A Recipe for Life. On display March 16th through September 2nd at the Virginia Museum of History and Culture in Richmond. Learn more and get tickets at virginiahistory.org. virginiahistory.org.